Magic.
And the world of illusion.
Magic TV.
And Craig Petty. Proudly present the Talk Magic Podcast. Every week we bring you awesome interviews with the greatest magicians that have ever lived. And now, here's your host, Craig Petty.
Hey guys, welcome back to episode 6 of Talk Magic. I am here with probably one of my favorite magicians of all time. John, thank you so much for being on the show. You are absolutely amazing.
Oh, wow. Thank you, Craig. I appreciate that. It's nice to see you. It's been many years since I think I saw you at the session in the UK.
It's been a few years. And have you been keeping well?
I have. Yeah. I've been, you know, it's interesting here, right? With the whole pandemic and everything, and you know, magic's a big part of my life, but I don't do it full time. I do a full time job that's focused on philanthropy. So I'm really, you know, doing some meaningful work, but I do magic every chance I get. So I've been fortunate enough to do some virtual shows, you know, release a couple downloads and just keep the creative juices going.
That's awesome. I mean, I don't know how you find the time to do everything that you do, because I follow you on Facebook, I follow you on socials. So I see all the amazing magic you're doing, but you're also a really talented musician. And then, as you say, you have a full-time job as well. So how do you fit everything in? I mean, good grief.
It's a good question, right? you know, I get asked that pretty often, you know, and I mean, I'm doing what I'm passionate about, but I think there comes a time when you're like, the more you do, the easier things start becoming, because you're drawing from this diverse experience, right? So all the things you mentioned aren't just in an individual box. To me, there's like a lot of crossover. So, you know, if I'm meeting with somebody who might want to make a donation in my day job to help a family, you know, I kind of draw from that same magic experience. Like, how can I captivate their imaginations? How can we create a wow factor with this experience? Or when I'm writing a song or developing a trick, it's there's a lot of similar overlap, right? Like, what is the hook? Whether it be a visual hook in magic or an audio hook with a guitar. So anyway, all of these things are very connected into one overarching goal. And it took me years to land on it, but I was actually, when I did a tour of Europe, a lecture tour in 2017. And on the way back, I really enjoyed being in front of these groups in every, you know, I think we did 18 different cities in 6 countries, but I enjoyed like just connecting with people. And I thought, well, that's probably part of my overarching mission statement. And then I finally landed on it, that I connect people to the extraordinary. And through my day job in philanthropy or magic or music or any number of things, they're all focused on that one goal. So anyway, that's kind of my overarching viewpoint. So try to share that.
Before we start talking about the magic and the music, tell me a bit more about what you do as your day job.
When I went to college, I always thought I'd be kind of in a high-rise ad agency, and I love marketing and advertising, and I've worked in numerous ways and helping to build brands and graphic design. But ultimately, like the nonprofit sector found me. So I spent many years working for the YMCA, which is the largest nonprofit in the world, doing great stuff here locally in Orange County. And then I saw the value in fundraising and development and really just making a meaningful difference. And then 2 years ago, I started a position as the CEO of what's called the Anaheim Community Foundation. So as a foundation, what we do is we provide grants to nonprofits. We provide program scholarships to parents and families who otherwise couldn't afford to maybe sign their kids up for certain programs like ballet or math or camp, things like that. So there's numerous other things we do to enrich the lives of the residents here where I live. But when the pandemic hit, like, you know, we just kicked into high gear, and we work with the city. And to date, we've released nearly $4 million of grants to nonprofits to help them feed the hungry, you know, connect isolated seniors during this pandemic, provide, you know, PPE, protective equipment, and everything else. So it's been really a meaningful part of my work, but it takes obviously a lot of time. So, but, you know, I often say I'm a nonprofit leader by day, but a magician and musician by night, because it's my time to kind of focus on my other creative interests. Thanks for asking about that.
No, yeah, it must be really rewarding.
Yeah,
Must be. Let's talk about magic for a bit, because I think the first time that you came into everyone's radar was when you bought out the L&L set, Brainstormers, which at the time had such a massive impact on me. I mean, I watched those DVDs and I was like, this is just stuff that I've never seen before. The thinking behind it was just amazing. And when I was interviewing Cameron Francis a couple of weeks ago, we talked about you and we both said they had such a massive impact on us. You weren't on anyone's radar before that. So my question is, how did you get into magic and how did you end up releasing a set of DVDs with L&L? Because that's the other thing. That's super exciting. I mean, you must have been one of the last people to bring out an L&L product. And
we're going old school right now, right? When you and I and others used to learn on VHS tapes, eventually they got into DVDs. But you're right. They took a chance, so to speak, on someone relatively unknown. Because as you know, they work with Michael Lamar and Jeff McBride and so many big names. And like, what are the odds they only work with someone they never heard of, right? It all came from just a passion for magic. So I would go to the Magic Castle like every Wednesday night for 3 years since I became a member in 95. And we'd hang out and I saw David Regal for the first time. The first time I was so nervous I couldn't even get a sentence out. But then we got to chatting more and I showed him a version of one of his tricks. I think it was called The Joker Works Overtime. And it was just my little twist. And I didn't have the 1 degree label that, but it was a 1 degree tweak on one of his ideas. And he really liked it. So anyway, we would talk a lot. And then he said, man, like we got to get your stuff unknown because it's all underground right now. Like So, and he was working with L&L in planning a trip to Lake Tahoe where they filmed. And this is like 2012, 13 at this point. And he said, hey, I'm going to talk to Louis Blanga at L&L and just see if he's interested in your stuff. So I put like a demo tape together, videoed a few tricks, sent it over, and they loved it. So they said, look, let's fly David out and let's fly you out the same weekend and we'll just have a fun time. We're gonna film David's, three DVD set and we're gonna film your two DVD set because I already kind of laid out. They had called the name Brainstorm because it was all just about different ideas over the years. And so anyway, David Regal was a huge advocate and connector to Louis Flanga. I'm so fortunate. It was all new to me, either this DVD was just gonna continue to be under the radar or it would, take off and become well known. And I'm so glad it was well received by the magic community.
It definitely was. And since then, obviously, you've produced multiple ebooks, multiple books, lots and lots of other projects. And how have you been able to create so much magic, especially with everything else going on? You must have so much material at this point. It's crazy. I mean,
I go through spurts. By the way, for all my ebooks, I want to thank you, Craig, for being one of my best customers. I think you must have had a weekend race. I gotta get all the John stuff I don't have yet. So absolutely. Thank you for that.
I finished my question.
Whenever I put stuff out in a book, I'm sharing my creativity, but there's lulls, right? Where it doesn't always, it's not always 100, 24 hours a day. I think Jay Sankey said it well, that creativity isn't something you do, it's something that happens. And it's, so whatever I can do to help spark those moments where creativity does happen. So whether it be kind of, conversations like this, you never know what idea might come out, or, having virtual, email or jams or, Zoom sessions with other magicians like John Bannon and Jack Carpenter and David Regal and Larry Wilmore and a few others. So anyway, there's a long list of people I kind of have jam sessions with, but that always kind of sparks some cool ideas as well. And a lot of it is, you'll probably recognize on Brainstorm. I mean, some of the stuff's innovative because it's an innovative tweak on an old classic. So a few tips I often give magicians are like, find a trick you really like and maybe think about is there a prequel to this? Like what's the untold story before this effect? And maybe there's another phase that doesn't exist that you create, or what's the sequel, right? Okay, this trick, but is it really over? What moment can we add to this that might create a, you know, a third or a second or third phase. So that's one way to look at it. Sometimes I talk about adding kind of a visual prop of interest. You know, I like to use organic props like the card box or, you know, or a clear luggage tag or something like that. You know, you won't see me using like little fancy boxes with a dragon painted on it or anything. It's so I try to use organic props of just visual interest. And so anyway, those are a few like the direct practical tips. I'll give you one quick example though too of this. So the trick I use with a clear sleeve where a card vanishes and reappears from it. So I mean, it's really based on a classic by Roy Walton. It's called Jefferson's Jest. And basically a card inside of a clear sleeve vanishes. So and there are other versions I saw of that too in a Peter Duffy book and several others, but it was all about different ways to make the card vanish. But like, okay, what if I can make the card reappear inside? So that's when the trick called lost and found. So it's lost and then it's found again. So I came up with a cool way to make the card appear back inside the sleeve. So anyway, those are just a few of the ways I kind of explore creativity and just kind of wait for those moments to happen and kind of seize them when they do.
And obviously you now talk a lot about one degree, about taking an effect and changing one degree.
Sure.
Talk to us more about that, because I know obviously you touched on it then. Can you talk to us more about that, especially in terms of how you do that with your own material? Because like you said, I do own every single ebook that you've done and every single product that you've got. And one thing that I've noticed is you will constantly revisit your old products or your old creations and you'll add something, but that thing that you add really does make it better. It's not like, you know, like you see product version 2.0 coming out, which is exactly the same.
Yeah.
It really does make a difference. So how would the magicians that are watching this, how can they use your one degree philosophy for their own work?
Sure. Yeah. So yeah, for those who haven't heard, like the one degree philosophy, it's not something I invented. You know, this whole like concept of small changes creating, you know, small changes creating big outcomes. You know, it's an interesting approach, but applied to magic, I think it's a pretty unique lens that I didn't see happening a lot. You know, and it really came out of just exploration. I'm using my audience as a mirror, like realizing and really being open to the learning along the way. Like, wow, like, why did this get a good reaction and this get a great reaction? Like, what was that one thing? Like it was a dramatic pause, or it was a joke to cover up the move. Or it was something like just instead of using a red back card, you know, like use a card from a different back design, you know, where the handling exactly the same, but it creates exponentially more powerful outcomes. So and the analogy for one degree is that, at least if you're measuring in Fahrenheit over here in the States, because I use Celsius, but you know, the boiling point is 212 degrees, right? So sometimes our magic, we're like, we're just one degree away from that, right? We're doing amazing work, but just one degree can take it to the boiling point. Or you can also look at a degree just in terms of travel, right? If you turn a boat or an airplane just one degree, eventually it's gonna be in a completely different place, right? So there's different lenses to look at it, but the idea is, I found when I was really kind of getting into magic, and I think a lot of young magicians too, like you bounce all over the place, right? You try this and then you turn 180 degrees and try this, like, oh, that didn't work. And you try to make this big shift. But oftentimes when you're into magic for a while, it's these small little shifts that really make the difference. So I'm trying to think of an example. I don't know. I guess I could just show you a quick example. So let me see. I wasn't really prepared to do anything. We'll just kind of go with the flow, right? So. I'll just prepare something here real quick. So, cool. So yeah, so this is the first trick in my book called One Degree, right? And it really is talking about my career in the marketing and advertising. And it's funny, speaking of advertising, you know, I'm going to show you three tips that you can follow so you're not kind of sucked into these advertising scams or you know, or buy something that you don't want. So the first choice is really simple. It's make sure you have a free choice. Whenever you're buying something, don't be lured into it. So like when I tell you to say stop at a card, make sure it's the one you want. And I'm not trying to lure you in with any sort of advertising lingo. So as I go through, you just say stop whenever you want.
Stop.
Fair enough. Okay, cool. If you were here, you would actually take the card out, but this is all virtual, right? So that's the first thing. The second thing about in advertising is you want to don't judge a product by its packaging. Sometimes it looks really good on the outside, but on the inside, it's not. Or never judge a deck of cards just by its back design, because if you would have looked closely, you realize it didn't really matter what card you chose. This is just a blank deck of empty promises, just a blank deck, as you can see straight at the camera. So, and you could have chosen any one, but here's the interesting thing. You chose the only blank, the only printed card in a completely blank deck, which is really interesting. So, which brings us to the third rule in advertising, and that's to watch out for subliminal advertising. Those are those messages you probably didn't see, they kind of register in your subconscious. Like, you probably didn't notice that earlier. This is a big thing, is a pick me, right? So it's like a big advertising slogan trying to get you to pick the only printed card in the blank deck, the two cards. But you know what? The real magic here, the real truth in advertising is you didn't pick the only printed card in a blank deck. You picked the only blank card in a completely printed deck. And then everything's examinable and all that stuff. So anyway, it's a fun trick. So, and it's an extension of an older trick of mine. On my second Storm DVDs, I had a trick where, a very similar trick, except this card was a blueback. It was the same as the rest, right? So you did have the same effect of a deck being printed and you picking the only printed card in a blank deck and vice versa, but you didn't have this. So in one degree, like this is a perfect example of a one degree change. So I changed it to an odd, but not just a red back for red back's sake. I weaved it into the story of pick me. So it was a subliminal advertising message. And it's just, I think it's really cool from a structural standpoint, because like this does everything. It's one card that creates that moment of a surprise, the blank deck part of it and the message part of it. And it's all examinable. I don't need to hide anything at the end. So anyway, that's kind of a cool example.
I've seen a lot of routines of yours where you do have blank decks turning into regular decks. And I remember the first time I saw you do something like that, I was like, that's rough and smooth. And when I realized it wasn't, I was like, oh my gosh, that is so good. You seem to do a lot of stuff with blank decks and you handle that so fluidly, I think is the word I'm looking for.
Oh, good. Well, I'm glad you think so. I didn't feel like it went all that well. It was all impromptu, but I just wanted to express the idea. So.
No, I'll tell you something else that I saw that I thought was amazing that you did on Facebook a little while ago. And you were doing the bag to life thing where you've got the coin that comes out of the clear bag. Yeah. And then you walked up to the screen to show the coin. And when you came back, it was a jumbo coin. And I was like, I got completely fooled at that point.
I'm so glad you liked that. I literally came up with that the night before. I was doing it on the Magic Castle Friday lunch. I did a show. And it was just had my virtual show. But now that I'm like do a few more virtual shows, I'm always trying to find ways to maximize this sort of thing. But the idea of bringing a coin to the thing and having it be a jumbo coin was just, I was just going to reveal the jumbo coin. But so that, I guess that's a one degree thing. I could reveal it here. I could reveal it here. And then it's kind of a delayed surprise. So, but I'm so glad you like that. I thought that was kind of a cool dual opener. So
yeah, that was great.
And then again, that's a perfect example too, because I added something, in the bag for life. It's not my effect, but where the coin comes out of a plastic bag and usually it ends there. I've seen versions where you can go into another phase. So I just went into the jumbo coin phase, but I wanted to be appreciated through the camera. So that's just a one degree tweak.
And how would people apply that one degree thinking to their own magic? Is there some advice you can give people how they can look at their own magic and apply that?
Sure. Yeah. So here's the thing, that not every small change is going to be a one degree change. So it's like you got to be kind of be open to that. A one degree change is something that's nearly effortless. It's simple. It's the handling's virtually the same. It's not a big thing you do. But also you have there the outcome is greater. So don't just add a bunch of little tweaks and think it's gonna work. It's trying to be really intentional on what that is. And I guess you'll know when you strike on it, when you get the reaction, that jumbo coin revelation stuck with you, or some of the other things that you've read stuck with you. So you have to also be open to your audience, because ultimately they are your mirror, right? So you have to kind of see it in action. And also ask around other magicians too, like, what do you think? And like, am I onto something here? I also found that if you're kind of newer in magic, you're just exploring a new effect, like that's probably not the best time to add a 1 degree tweak. You gotta work with it for a while. You know, and back to our analogy, you have to work with it. It's like you're building up, you're heating it up until it gets to almost to the boiling point. And that's right where this fever pitch time is, where, okay, this is the time where it's either done or I can add one more thing. So anyway, I know that's kind of ambiguous the way I talk about it. But I guess a few of the criteria are, like I said, it has to be effortless, a big change. It has to, it could be a move. It could be an action in terms of how you interact with your audience, like a pause or calling somebody by name or something like that. It could sometimes even just be a change in the premise of an effect. And this is kind of interesting here, but there's a, you know, here's a good example. So we've probably all seen the multiple selection routine, where a magician finds 5, 6, 15 cards sometimes, right? So for me, it wasn't the amount of cards or the way they were found that made it stronger. I mean, I've seen a lot and they're all great. You know, I see a magician find 6 cards, it's impressive. When they find 10 or 12, it's still impressive. But for me, in my style, you know, that wasn't the only way to make it stronger. Changing the premise to me was stronger. So I said, oh, what if finding the cards was just kind of the bonus? What if the real thing was I read 5 people's minds or 7 people's minds, and I just happened to find the cards as well? So that's a change in premise, where now it becomes a mind reading trick. And I just happen to find them in a fun way after. So that's an interesting tweak, right? Where you just change the premise from a multiple selection to a multiple mind reading effect. So that's when in one of my books I had multi-mental, and it's in my book Discoveries and Deceptions, and it's a really nice kind of 4 to 5 minute parlor type routine where 7 people, you show 7 people a card, and then you read their minds and you find the cards too. So that's that changing a premise. And let me add one more. When you talk about me exploring my effects, right? I love the effects so much, but then I also realize that I can't always do this when I want to. I don't always have at least seven people to do the trick. I don't always have a captive audience in a parlor setting to do this kind of showpiece. So then I said, I came up with a version of that called mini mental. It's a 4 selection routine. And it's about a 2 minute trick now, and it's perfect for strolling situations. I kind of do it virtually sometimes as well. So that's another way where I add another 1 degree tweak, where I little points in the handling where it's very streamlined, but the premise is still the same. I read 4 people's minds and I just happen to find the trick. So I find the cards as well. So anyway, those are a few examples for me that may help you.
Did you do a version of that on your At the Table lecture as well?
Oh my gosh, did I? I think I did. I did the full version, the seven selection.
As soon as you were saying it, I was like, I remember John performing this at At the Table. Yeah.
Yeah, it was fun. It was perfect for that situation because I had a live audience and I had fun with each person as I was doing it. But I realized in more common situations, like, you know, a strolling situation, where I wanted to fit it into my CASA routine, but also have time to do other routines. Like that was kind of a really cool direct hit to do the mini mental version of it. But I guess the big lesson there is that people remember you read their mind, and I did it a few times at different lectures, and I've had other magicians come up to me. It's like, there's another thing that's cool about that too. Cause sometimes the audience is, they're kind of nervous. Like, what if I forget my card and stuff? So instead of like saying, what was your card? 7 of spades, and you find it. Like sometimes asking them like, what was your card? It's kind of jolting, right? So now I get to say, you know, you had a red card, the diamond, the 6 of diamonds, and it jogs their memory at the same time. And it's just a cool moment. Like you just crawled in their head and helped them remember something that they're only thinking about. And then you say, by the way, somewhere in this deck is your 6 of diamonds, and we're going to find it. So you get kind of two moments instead of one. So
that's very, very cool. It is a great routine.
Cool. Thank you.
Yeah. No, it really is. I did a poll on Facebook. I mentioned I was interviewing you, and I had people ask me, what question shall I ask John? And a couple of people wanted me to ask you, How would they go about creating a magic trick? Because obviously you've created so much magic. And what would the process be if they wanted to release their own trick or their own ebook? Can you offer advice on creating a magic trick? And, you know, you've marketed a lot of magic. And the reason I asked this, and I thought it was a good question, is because you've actually, you know, you've released material through Vanishing Ink, you've released material through NLL, you've worked with different publishers and different dealers, but also you've self-published a lot of your books yourself and a lot of your ebooks yourself. So you can look at it from both sides of the coin, so to speak.
Okay, so here's the deal. So, you know, producing magic products and downloads was never my end game, never really my goal, right? So I would say my first bit of advice was, don't start with, okay, how can I create a trick to market and to sell? You know, the best brands in the world didn't really start off that way. You know, Apple didn't start off to say like, okay, how are we going to be, you know, the, you know, one of the best brands of, you know, computers and mobile devices in the world. They just started off with like, how are we going to get computing in the hands of everyday people and make it look cool and sleek, right? And Starbucks too. I mean, they didn't start off, they were just a small shop in Seattle. And they really had a love for just roasting the beans and inviting people in to watch the process, right? And this whole idea of inviting people in to enjoy this experience of coffee, like that was the goal. And the fact that they grew into a, you know, a worldwide, you know, brand is something that happened as a result of that passion. So find what the passion is, find what you love. Like I love magic, I love close-up magic. I love the interaction with people. I love those visual moments where there's obviously no trap door or any sort of thing, right? It's just a cool experience. I also love cards because I think there's just really something artistic you know, historical about cards. It goes back for many, many centuries. So find out why you like the things you do. Find out why it's, you know, why, what you're passionate about. So start there. And then you'll be surprised that oftentimes these great things happen. So this whole thing with L&L, like that wasn't my goal. I just showed things at the castle. I met David Regal. And then you had, you know, in that case, it was somebody with a nudge saying, hey, like more people should see this. Is that something you're interested in? And let's see what happens kind of thing. So, so start there. But then when it comes time to actually developing an effect that you like, you know, don't be too quick on it. You know, it's not always going to happen. Sometimes it's years of tweaking. Like the most recent download I did with Vanishing Ink is called Wonder Aces. And it's a combination of ideas that from One Degree, from I had the introverted ace production, right? Then I had this other trick where with a color changing deck, right? It's like, oh, what? I never thought of combining the two. So be open to let it percolate for a while and see how you might, combine different seemingly separate ideas and how they might weave together in a really interesting way. So that's kind of another thought. I feel like I'm rambling, but I just want to, I guess a few more tips, sorry. Yeah. If you're trying to find what you like, sometimes, you know, read a lot and buy a lot of books, but I think compilation books, like when I bought the Collected Almanac, it is basically Richard Kaufman's Almanac. Right, exactly.
I talked about this on the channel. It's amazing that there's so much material in. That's the first time I was introduced to Jay Sankey. That's that, you know, I got that.
There you go, right? Jay Sankey and Michael Gallo, and there's all so many. David Roth of the Coin Magic. So, for me, being fairly new into magic, it gave me an opportunity to see a spectrum of material and also identify with it, like, wow, like. I really like the creativity of Paul Harris, you know. And then later on, like as I saw John Bannon's, I really like the smart thinking and, you know, the methods behind Bannon stuff. And I like the exuberance and the creative presentation that David Regal brought. So these are some of my influences, by the way, as you could tell. So I find those magicians you identify with and then and kind of unpack those effects and hopefully it sparks something new. And and know your strengths, right? Like my strengths aren't to do a poker demonstration. Oh, I'm wearing a poker. That's very ironic, by the way, but I like the spade there, but I do some pseudo kind of gambling things, but it's not my thing. Right. I don't do like tabled pharaohs. You're not going to see me do a diagonal palm shift. but you will see me trying to make the most of what I have, right? I really try to connect with the audience, react with them, take, you know, make it as simple as possible, you know, but that doesn't mean that there's sometimes there might be some challenging moves. So just, but know what your strengths are and capitalize on those as well. So hopefully that helps.
That really does. That really does. Yeah. I was going to ask you a question and you pretty much answered there, but I'll ask it anyway in case you want to add anything. I was going to ask who your influences are on your magic. You mentioned David Regal. You mentioned a few other people. I mean, you are from Los Angeles. So you obviously, and you've talked about hanging out at the castle, which, you know, that's such an amazing thing to be able to do. So, I mean, were there people that influenced your magic? And also, how important do you think it is as somebody who's getting into magic for the first time, being able to find other magicians that they can bounce ideas off and not just kind of sit on the internet, but actually go out there and, you know,
important, right? I mean, it's so important. I mean, growing up, just the idea of going to a magic store, like the brick and mortar, like that was really a fun experience, but you know, things evolve. And now there's the virtual thing is great. You know, there's YouTube magic everywhere. You can almost Google anything and find something, but I think really having the dialogue like we're having is so crucial, and being open to feedback. You don't want to just surround yourself with yes people who will say like, it's great. Yeah, I love it. You know, people say, I don't know, keep working on that. Or here, have you thought of this? So surround yourself with the right people and be open to constructive criticism and, you know, as well as praise. Hanging out at the castle, I mean, yeah, like, I think that's when I got to know David Regal and then Larry Wilmore as well. He's known as, you know, Hollywood writer and producer and actor and talk show host and everything else too, but he's also just a great magician. And it was really great when I wrote for Genie magazine, I got to profile a whole feature article on him and his work. So yeah, so there's probably names, you know, magicians you haven't heard of and some you have heard of. But like I said, so I guess some of the biggest influences are, you know, my friends like Larry Wilmore, but also David Regal and John Bannon, Paul Harris, Jay Sankey. You know, and there's probably many. I don't want to single anybody out, but I have another really cool email session that I do with the likes of Jack Carpenter, John Rockerbomber and Stephen Minch and I interact from time to time. Just surround yourself with the right people and reach out and don't be shy about it. And like I said, yeah, be open to turn monologue into dialogue. So I think that helps.
No, it really does. And one last question about that or on this subject. Out of everything that you've ever created, what would your favorite effect be? As Greg Wilson would say, what's your thousand timer? What's your favorite thing that you do at the drop of a hat that you've created?
So hard. Oh my God. I was saying like, who's your favorite child or something? If I was on a desert island, I could only do like one or two tricks or whatever. I don't know. I really, a trick called Homage to Homing, which is a three-phase card to pocket routine, which I really like. I think it has a little bit of everything, you know, in terms of a card going to your pocket three times and some cool moves with the aces and things like that. I really like that trick. The trick I described earlier called Lost and Found, where a card disappears and reappears inside of a clear sleeve, is kind of fun.
I think that's one of the things that people, when I first found out about your Brainstorm DVDs and everyone was telling me to get them, that was the trick that everybody was describing. The Lost and Found.
It's fun. I mean, it's I probably put myself in a limb here even trying to do it. By talking about a 1 degree change, so I used to just use a clear sleeve and say, oh, it's a clear sleeve. Then I started calling a luggage tag because then it became more meaningful. But then here's a 1 degree trick years later, like, well, let's just add a little handle on it. So now it looks more like a luggage tag, I suppose. And it becomes more hands off, as you'll see. So I guess I'll just do a quick, like, streamlined version of it, because normally it's a very long, it's a three phase routine, but I'll just do the main essence of it. I'm going to get the jokers out first. Perfect. Maybe I could do that. I guess I could try to do the whole thing. These are interesting jokers, though. These are from the Jet Setter cards. They look like little boarding passes, which is kind of cool. So anyway, so let's try this. I'm going to have you, as I go through, just say stop at any card you like.
Stop?
Oh, at the 10 of hearts. So this, 10 of spades, I'm sorry. So this would be your card. You would sign this. Maybe put your name on it. It'll represent your luggage on like a little trip that we're going to take, and I'll put it over there for right now. As a matter of fact, we're going to put your 10 of spades inside of this clear sleeve. I have my glasses. It's really hard to see. And my hands are kind of slippery. Can you see that okay?
I can see it fine, yeah.
The angle and everything? Okay, cool. I feel so weird. I'm going to put my glasses on just for a second because I can't see really well all the light. Okay, perfect. Okay, so we'll put this in here. Excellent. There we go. Awesome. Okay. So it's inside the sleeve, but also don't forget the jokers. So the two jokers are gonna help us kind of keep your card in safe. So actually, I'll put one joker on top. So we'll keep your card sandwiched in between the luggage tag. One joker on top, one on the bottom, your card in the middle. But you know when you're traveling, that there's that fear of losing your luggage, even though you know where it is and even though it's safe. It's kind of interesting. We'll snap and the card vanishes completely, just like that. Yeah, and sometimes it just goes on the wrong flight completely. If you look down on the deck, it would be your sign, 10 of spades in this case. So that's an interesting thing, this invisible flight. So let's try this again. Let's get your 10 of spades back between the jokers. Perfect. And we'll just leave it right here in the middle. They're all facing the same way. But you know, if you're on a plane, they say during turbulence, some baggage may shift, right? So we get some turbulence and then it causes your car to turn over, which is kind of interesting. So let's put everything facing the same way again, but get a little bit more turbulence. And then the card turns face up again. So that's kind of fun. So I could do this all day, really. So, but we'll put your 10 right there in the middle. So it's the only card, say down there right in the middle, but we're gonna put it back on a flight. We'll put it back in the deck right about there. Just leaving up with the two jokers. And we have this clear luggage tag. So for the final part here, I'm just gonna sandwich this clear luggage tag by putting one joker on the top, one joker on the bottom. And in this case, I might even have you hold on. If you were here, I'd hold on. But watch, I go like this, an invisible flight from the deck back right into your hand. I'm just going to pull in the luggage tag a little bit, and you'll see that one card is now inside the luggage tag. It would be your sign, 10 of spades. And anyway, that's lost and found. So I guess that's one of my favorite routines. A lot of fun moments in there.
And was that based on something, or... you know, was there a 1 degree change involved in that? Because it's so original. I mean, the first phase reminds me a little bit of The Bizarre Vanish, and you've talked about Paul Harris being an inspiration. So I don't know if there was any.
Yeah, no, honestly, the first phase is where the starting point, and I would say that's the least of what I'd added. It's based on Roy Walton's Jefferson's Jest, which I mentioned earlier. And I think I was reading Effortless Card Magic by Peter Duffy. There's a trick by is it Steve Hamilton, I believe, called Clear and to the Point. And again, the idea was a card vanishing from a sleeve, and the idea of the jokers, you know, and the card vanishing was essentially that. So this is a perfect example of what I said earlier, like what can we add a sequel, you know? So my sequel is I'm getting the card back inside, and nowhere am I reading that I see, okay, can we get a card back inside? And that's where the exploration started. Okay, like how can I get it back inside? I made a slit, I did try doing a switch, and then ultimately just came up with a really cool devious solution, which I won't give here, but to get the card back inside. So what I added was the sequel, and then I also added that little interlude. So the first phase, the card vanishes, the middle phase, you have this fun, kind of fun thing about turbulence, right? Where the card turns upside down, back and forth, and then it goes back inside for the final phase. So a lot of little 1 degree goodness in there. Really embraces my brand of it being creative and yet fairly simple. And then tons of 1 degree tweaks, like adding this to it. And I guess another big 1 degree tweak is I was showing this at the Magic Castle library to Gordon Bean years ago. He was a librarian there. And I was holding on to the thing at the end. And he said, do you have to hold on to it? Or what if I held on to it? I go, oh, wow. Yeah, you could hold on to it. So again, that's a 1 degree tweak. Either I hold it or you pinch it. Like now it's in the spectator's hands. Handling's just the same. I just had to modify it just a tad, but now it happens in your hands. And then years later in 1 degree in the book, I added this thing, which now it's like, it's almost completely hands off. You're holding onto this. And all I do is do this and the card appears inside. So that's an example of 1 degree, like layers over the years to finally get it to the point where I showed you. And my God, I can't believe I remember. I haven't done that actually full routine in a long time. So I think I remember.
Right. It looked great. It looks amazing.
Yeah, I guess anyway, but I guess that's a long answer and demonstration of your question about like what trick. I guess it would be, I mentioned that card to pocket one, but I also, this trick means a lot to me because it extends all the way from the brainstorm DVDs through my book 1 degree, where I explained how I've improved upon it to kind of it's where it is now. And I guess sometimes you have to know when it's done. Like maybe I think it's done. I don't think I'm gonna keep adding to it. It's like when an artist paints a painting, like at some point you step away and like, okay, yeah. Or you might go back and add a stroke of the brush on some area, but I think that's pretty cool. So yeah.
And we have a lot of newer people into magic coming on this channel. And I know we've talked about your brainstorm DVDs throughout this interview. Are they still available? Can you still get them?
Are they? I probably have like a little small little stash for my lectures. They probably are. Yeah. I think, you know, L&L Publishing, you could get them or some, you know, online shops have them.
Okay.
I also think with the whole download thing that there's the downloadable versions of it somewhere, but I don't know the exact answer or where. But I think they've digitized a lot of the things to be in download format.
So. And here's another question. Selfish, this is a question just for me. Where can you get those luggage tags? Because I remember when I watched Brainstorm, I got a workaround. I figured I got something that worked for me that wasn't what you were suggesting, but it had the same properties to achieve the same thing. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't the actual luggage tags that you use. I couldn't find those for love nor money.
They're hard to find. Yeah, I'll be honest. And at one point I bought a whole batch of them and I was selling them on my website, but then where I was getting them, they stopped selling them, like that exact one. There's one website. I think it's all one word. If they might still have them, namebadgeproductions.com. And they sell all kinds of different luggage tags and different sizes. So I forgot the exact dimensions, but you want a little bit bigger than a card, right? You also want a vertical loading, meaning that the opening is on the vertical side and not the horizontal side. Sometimes a baseball card protector can work, but they're really thick. It still works, but this is just the right thickness. So you can try Name Badge Productions or just Googling, clear name badge holders, vertical loading, and just try to find the right dimensions. So, and then you do have to do a little bit of work. Like you have to kind of trim it down and add the half moon cutout and punch a hole with a hole puncher. And I bought some camera straps. So that's how kind of my process. But yeah, I there's not one specific site. I have a couple of them and I'm holding on to them just in case they stop making these things. Yeah, but they're essentially name badge holders. You just got to find just the right size. So.
And completely changing the subject, you've mentioned that you're doing virtual shows now, as is every other magician in the world. Have you got any advice on virtual shows? Because a question that we get an awful lot on this channel is, how do I put together a virtual show? It's especially, I don't know if it's, well, I have a rough idea of what it's like in America, but over in the UK, we're basically unable to perform for more than 5 people until March next year. So
we're kind of... Yeah, at least you have a date. I don't know where it's going to really start opening up here.
We've been here 6 months, so we're thinking March.
Let me just say, I've done a handful of Zoom shows, so I'm by no means an expert. There's others who are like really going on the Zoom bandwagon, doing an amazing job at it, doing featured shows. And as opportunities present themselves, I'll do that. I'm also, I've kind of retweaked my website to talk about virtual and or kind of safe distance shows. You know, if a family's having something in their backyard, they want a magician to come. I've redesigned like my signature act to be done where you don't have to touch the props. I could stay 6 feet away. So it's contactless at a safe distance. So I would say, start preparing for live shows as they sort of, I think they're gonna probably start ramping up, right? So, and I've even like I usually perform at the castle in the close-up room, but I've kind of tweaked my next act as a parlor act, just in case that might be a room that we'd be more apt to be open when those doors open again. It's not open right now. But in terms of the Zoom shows, yeah, it's like find ways to connect with your audience, try to come up with interactive things, asking questions. How would you have somebody pick a card virtually, right? So you want to make sure it's fair in that way. It helps to, like right now I'm on my phone. If this was a Zoom show, I'd also log in the same Zoom account with my laptop right next to it. And I would use my laptop to see all the thumbnails of the entire audience. So I could see the audience, but on my phone right here, I could see me. So I could do that way. I made a few 1-degree tweaks to my routine. So it could be appreciated through the screen, literally through the screen, like the coin mute thing we were talking about. I do the multiple selection routine through the screen, read people's minds through the screen, which is kind of fun. I've been working on a really cool virtual trick. We'll present it later in another venue somehow, but it's basically where, you know, you can grab a few cards and do something with me. So I think there's a few tricks and ideas out there that are being marketed. I think Max Maven released something through Penguin Magic, virtual visions, or it's a series of I think five or six routines that can all be done virtually or interactively through the screen. So yeah. Anyway, just a few tips, but I would just say look for ways to connect to your audience. Try to call them by name. You know, you could see the thumbnails if you want to make sure you can see your audience and everything, and then just try to tweak your routines. There's some tricks that just won't work, I suppose, right? So, but I think those that are visual in nature, those that are interactive in nature, play it best. So hopefully that helps.
No, that does help. That does help. Good. And good. A couple of other questions before we wrap things up. You obviously are a musician and a very good musician. I've watched your stuff on social media. I'm very, very impressed. Would you say that being a musician has helped you in any way with your magic, maybe from a creativity point of view or a performance point of view? Is there a crossover there? I know a lot of people that watch these videos that are on this channel, they also, you know, have a musical intro. I've got a friend called Sai who's a bass player and also a magician. Mm-hmm. So I know that there's a crossover there. I just wondered where.
Yeah, I think there is a natural progression already. I mean, if you're into magic, you're likely into something, other creative things as well. You know, I have friends that are like writers in Hollywood or musicians or artists, things like that. So I think it's probably not a big leap to find magicians who are also engaged in other creative interests. But for me, I've always loved music and guitar specifically. So I think, yeah, I think that the main ways that can help, there's certainly dexterity, I think, with the cards and playing chords and scales and things like that. I think there's also, I mentioned earlier about just that idea of structuring a song. So there's it draws you in from the beginning. Maybe it picks up the pace. I play like a lot of like Spanish, fast-paced Spanish guitar. So that it makes you kind of feel the music. Then there's also something that you want, and when it's done, you kind of keep humming in your head, right? So that's how I try to write my instrumentals, but I try to do my magic the same way. So you still keep replaying the moment in your head. And there's like a little surprise, or in the song, there's what's called a bridge where there's the A section, the B section, the hook, and then that goes into a bridge, like, oh, kind of a new section, and then it revisits it again. So sometimes the way you structure a song and a trick is very similar as well.
Mm-hmm. I unfortunately couldn't play a musical instrument to save my life, so it's just no clue. Quick question before we finish, a couple of quick questions.
Sure.
Do you have any advice? This is another question that was asked, that I was told to ask you. Do you have any advice for dealing with nerves or shaky hands? Obviously, you've put yourself in some very stressful situations before the castle. I can imagine.
Oh my gosh, nerve-wracking. I'll be honest. So, yeah, I mean, it's something I've had to work on a lot. You know, I mean, there was many years that went by where I just didn't perform at the castle because I didn't want to put myself in that situation. Like, don't get it in your head like I did. Like, oh, well, what if I mess up? What if I'm, you know, if I'm doing 20 shows in a week, something's bound to happen. And so you get in your head. And I remember I finally said, I'm just going to I'm going to do it. And it was like the most amazing experience. So don't let the fear build up in your head. It was a Jack Goldfinger, the entertainment director at the castle, who I was talking to after my shows. And, you know, he really liked the show. And I said, Jack, I don't know why I waited so long. He says, it was just you getting in the way of you. And I, wow, that's true. So I guess the first tip is don't let you get in the way of you. Also, another tip, a mentor of mine told me one time, like, don't just try to get rid of the butterflies, because I get them. We all get them, right? You know, some of them, it's more than others, I suppose, but don't just try to get rid of them. Just get them, your butterflies, to fly in formation. So I think about that sort of mantra as well. There's a book by Steve Cohen called Win the Crowd, and he does, you know, magic in New York, and a lot of great tips on tricks, but he also has a lot of tips on performance and how to stand with confidence, you know, the way you position your feet, put your shoulders back, you know, before a show, take some deep, slow breaths, those sort of things. And for me, sometimes it's just coming up with a mantra or a routine before a show, you know, because I've found, you know, be open to find out, like, what are those little, those things you need to get over? You know, when you're nervous, you tend to talk faster, your mouth may get dry. This is all for me, by the way. I tend to talk faster when my mouth gets dry, and I maybe don't smile as much because I'm thinking about the next move, right? So those are all things I think about. So I always make sure, you know, I have like water next to me just in case. It's just kind of a nice safety net, because the last thing you want to do is get really parched in the middle of your show. I tell myself to speak a little slower and more articulately and pause and take my time. What was the other thing? Oh, remind myself to smile. It's a great form of misdirection, by the way, because, you know, if you're thinking about the next move, you like, you know, it's probably not common to smile as you do a cut or whatever. But I smile through a lot of the moves as well. And then at the end of the day, you just have fun. Like, you have to know your material. Know your material back and forth, so you could do it without looking, right? And because then it enables you to concentrate on your audience. Like, you know, I'm just doing a show here, but I could look at somebody while I'm doing it. And you have to know it so well where you can really connect with your audience. And final tip, I suppose, is start with something that you know really well, that's maybe easy that way. Because once you get through that first trick, I guarantee you, you're going to be on a smooth sailing from there. So don't try to do something so challenging, because if you mess up or things don't go according to plan on the first thing, it might be in your head the whole time. But if you start off with something fun and easy and something you love doing, it's gonna come across. And once you get over that, you're like, okay, it's like, it's the takeoff of your, and then you're soaring through the rest of your act. So those are a few things.
That is great advice. I have two more questions that I've been given, and then I'm out of questions. So the next one is, now, we don't give anything away on this channel. We don't do tutorials or anything. So I'm hoping that you can try and answer this without doing a tutorial, because I don't want to go down that route. Okay. We've had two people say, can you give any advice on perfecting the ballet cut? Is there any way that you can kind of
advise? It's so hard, yeah, because this is only for people in the know of what the ballet cut is, right? Mm-hmm. So I won't try to do it, but the ballet cut, for those who don't know, it's just a simple, elegant, kind of fun, flourishy cut. So it looks like that. So
I love it.
Practice a lot, and don't do it in two moves. Don't go. You want to get one move, and you want to throw it just at the right force that the halves land on top of each other perfectly. So, if you play in slow motion, you'll figure it out. But the idea is, it's a fun cut. It has a lot of applications. But you want to try to be graceful with it.
I find it makes a brilliant force.
Yeah, exactly. That's one of the applications. So yeah, it's on my Brainstorm DVDs, as you know, and it's also described in detail in my book, One Degree.
So yeah, fantastic. And the last question, John.
Well, you said last question like 10 times so far. I'll be here all day with you.
Say really something, like, and it makes me think of something else, and then I'm like, ah.
No problem, man. Yeah.
We're 10 questions away from the end, and then hopefully.
That's fine.
what's next? I mean, and I ask this to every single person I've interviewed, I've asked this question, because of everyone I've interviewed, they've had an amazing career in whatever it is that they're doing. And you especially, you know, you've got a full-time job. You've released so much magic that you find very rewarding. You've released so much magic. If you decided to stop performing now, you know, your legacy is set as a creator of magic.
Oh, wow. Thank you.
It really is. If you never created anything again, your legacy is absolutely 100% set. You know, you've performed in the castle. You've done so much. And obviously, you know, you're not giving up right now. So what's next? What's on the bucket list? Is there something that you're wanting to achieve?
So a couple of things I really enjoy doing are combining everything I've talked about, you know, like decades of work in marketing, advertising, and philanthropy, decades of work in magic and lecturing and inspiring people. So so I often give these talks on the business side, you know, to groups that want to be really inspired. Like, how can you apply the one degree concept to business? How can you engage your clients or your team using one degree tweaks? So that's something I enjoy doing now, but I, you know, I, in terms of what's next, I'd love to see that grow. Yeah, I think that's one of the big things. And you know, specifically, like a TED Talk is something I really would love to do. I know there's a few magicians who have done TED Talks where where you weave a message with magic. So it's something I'm intently focused on. So that's a next big goal of mine. I would love to do that. And then magic wise, there's a few things in the works. You know, David Regal and I are working on something kind of fun. So in the coming months. So I'll just put a teaser right there. So
there's going to be something else coming too.
There's more coming. And I would love to write a one degree part two kind of thing. Because it's been 10 years since One Degree came out. Yeah, you would feel that it's still new, because I think people still talk about it, or still people who pick it up for the first time now. But it was in 2010 that One Degree was released, and I always would, you know, I'm talking to the Vanishing Ink guys about, okay, what would a One Degree part two look like beyond just what the title would be, but like it would have to be something really special. So you know, I have like notes sketched out, but I just need to find the time to really explore and give it the time it deserves. So those are a few things kind of swirling in my head for what's next.
You're not going to stop being busy anytime soon, are you?
No.
I genuinely thought that was the last question, but as you were speaking, I've thought of one other question.
And
this, well, this is something that I asked Michael Rubenstein a couple of weeks ago when I was interviewing him.
Okay.
Because Michael, like you, has had a full-time career his entire life as a veterinarian. Having his own surgery, and then also being a magician, creating magic, being a lecturer. There is quite a crossover there. And the question I asked him, I'd love to ask you the same question, which is, how do you, I know we touched on, wow, you're so busy, but genuinely, how do you juggle having a full-time job with having something that requires so much creativity and practice and efforts? You know, it is a question that we get an awful lot. People getting into magic, they love magic and they get frustrated because they haven't got the time to practice as much as they want because they've got a full-time job, they've got a wife, they've got a husband, they've got you know, kids maybe, or family, whatever. How do you juggle all of that?
Yeah.
You know, how do you juggle all of that?
You just gotta find what works best for you. You know, the twilight hours are like my prime time, you know, so... I go to bed a little later usually, and I have that those evening hours where I can kind of explore. I always have a deck of cards nearby when inspiration hits. There's a lot of things you could do in magic that where you're not necessarily practicing too, like just using the notes app in my phone all the time, or just an idea might come and just get it in there before I forget, right? You know, here we are. It's a Saturday afternoon, and I'm switching gears so I could focus on magic and spend a little time with you. So yeah, it's like anything. It's just trying to find that balance that works for you. But like I said, I think in the beginning of the interview, at some point, like the more you do, the easier a lot of those things become, because you're drawing from the same sort of mindset. So try to find some synergistic ways. If I'm taking a walk and try to get my 10,000 steps in today, I might listen to a podcast to inspire me, or I might be just thinking about a trick that I'm working on, or am I thinking about the work week ahead kind of thing? But how can you combine, you know, your different actions, yeah, to like synergistically combine rather than be all compartmentalized? So
great advice. Thank you so much.
Yeah, awesome.
John, it's been a real pleasure having you on the show, honestly. It's, you know, you're somebody I wanted to speak to right at the very beginning, and I'm so glad that you've been. I know, like I said, you're a busy guy, and thank you so much for finding time to chat to me.
Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it. Great questions, great interview, and I hope to see you soon too when I'm up in the UK again after all this.
Are you planning on doing another international tour at some point?
I don't have anything set. I don't have anything set, but I would love to, you know, get back on a lecture circuit, you know. When the time is right, moments like this I really value. So thank you.
No problem. Thanks very much, John.
Okay, man. We'll talk to you soon. Thanks, Craig.
Okay. Thanks, John. Take care. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Talk Magic Podcast. Magic. Be sure to like and subscribe to the Magic TV YouTube channel, Magic TV, which includes 14 unique videos every week. Whatever type of magic you're interested in, we've got you covered. Just search YouTube for Craig Petty's Magic TV, or click on the link in the description from this podcast below. Be sure to join us next Friday at 5 p.m. right here for another Talk Magic Podcast.